Blog Talk Radio.
We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome to Culture Vigilante. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and I am joined here this evening with Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots. And together this evening, we're going to try to bring you the next hour or so of lively debate and discussion about how to take back your country and the things that you can do to be actively engaged in that endeavor, because we really need it, folks. It's a big darn mess, and the more I get involved in it, the more I see it coming. Thank you for being with us tonight, Cindy. Thanks for, I know you've had a busy week. Thanks for hopping on.
Hey, no problem. I'm really glad to be here, and thank you for having me again. And I'm looking forward to tonight's show and see what we can inspire people to do.
Yeah, we have a pretty, we just have a couple of really interesting guests tonight, but we plan to spend some extended time with them. We'll have William Estrada from parentalrights.org. He has been with us before and talked to us about various issues, parental rights issues. He's going to talk to us tonight about the Romicke family from Germany. I wrote a piece a few weeks back for politichicks.tv about this German homeschooling family who fled to the U.S. under political asylum, and now the government is trying to revoke their political asylum and send them back. And William Estrada is going to give us all of the information on how, why that's bad, not only for the Romicke family, but for everybody and their parental rights and their educational freedom. Oh, yeah, it's just getting worse and worse. And, you know, the Obama administration, you know, what would you expect? And then later on in the hour, we're going to have Alan Levy from Citizen Legislators, Inc., and we talked to Molly Neesham last week a little bit about it. And Alan Levy is one of the founders of Citizen Legislators, Inc. It's a national organization that is trying to put forth a constitutional amendment through the Congress, not as a con-con, to bring about term limits to our national legislators. And thank God somebody's doing it, because we absolutely need it. We'll talk a little bit later. There was an article, Cindy and I were talking before the show a little bit. Our illustrious Senator Roy Blunt signed into or helped put forth a bill which was signed into law by the president establishing the Monsanto Protection Act. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a little while. But, you know, folks,
yeah, he
I'm
did
telling,
a little more than help with it.
Yeah, I think that bill was bought and sold, and he was, you know, folks, it kind of ties into this citizen legislator thing, folks, because I'm telling you, we got to get the establishment Republicans and Democrats. It's not just the Republicans, the establishment politicians on a national level and even a state level have just become impenetrable. We've got to do something to break it up, and I hope that maybe the Citizen Legislator Inc. is going to be a way to at least put a dent in the armor of that just impenetrable force that is establishment politics. I mean, it's just totally a mess.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people will say, well, but the voting booth is where we establish term limits. Well, I disagree with the parties. The way the parties operate today, that is not where term limits are decided. And right. I think that in order to clean up our legislature from top down, bottom up, the middle, the whole thing, we really do need term limits. And I'm tired of hearing politicians whine about how they can't get things done because there are term limits.
They can get things done if they want to really fast. You know, they got Obamacare done really fast.
They don't have a problem getting done what they want to get done. You're absolutely right, Lisa. And, you know, but the people are the ones that are being robbed because the parties and the money that drives them are the ones that are giving us the people that we have in office for the most part. And we have no way of removing them, not when a company can buy a Senate seat like Monsanto has done with Kit Bond.
Yeah, and Roy Blunt. You know,
I mean, Roy Blunt, I'm sorry.
And we need to start
with another story.
Patriot movement people in Missouri and beyond, because, you know, it's going to take the help of people out of state to help get this done. But it is time to start vetting candidates to take Blunt's seat when he's up for reelection. I mean, he has done some just inexcusable things. You know, it's no secret. He's not really working in the best interest of the people, and he's going to continue to do that. And as it gets closer to election time, he's going to soften because he knows that the memory of the folks is very limited. It's very short. But the reality is if we don't become vigilant and we don't start vetting candidates, good conservative, and I don't want to say Tea Party candidates, I just want to say good conservative candidates to start stepping up, you know, and we don't give them real support, We're in big trouble. And by real support, I mean, here's a segue into something else I wanted to talk about, too. I just want to finish up on this. One of the reasons that you have such a hard time breaking the establishment foil, bubble, whatever, is that the media controls the elections. You know, the media controls everything, and the media is controlled by the left. And by now, most of the people inside the Patriot bubble understand that. But you know, so that's hopefully why we'll talk to Alan Levy about the citizen legislator, because I think that's very helpful. But the culture is defined by the media, and the media is controlled by the left, and that kind of segues me into a subject that I kind of wanted to talk about tonight for the opening rant. Last week we had Dr. Gina Loudon on the program. And she was just getting the episode of Wife Swap that her and her family were on was going to air the next night on Thursday night. And Gina has taken a great deal of heat from a lot of people about doing that episode. And here's the deal about that, folks. I mean, we kind of went into this last week, but after I saw the episode, it kind of hit me square between the eyes of what we're really dealing with. Most of us that are involved in the Patriot movement live within a bubble. And we have spent many years actually preaching to the choir. We are all of like minds, generally speaking, and we all kind of want the same things. You know, we differ on things here and there, but basically we're very constitutionally minded and we're kind of all on the same train tracks. After watching Wife Swap last week and listening to Gina's explanation as to why she went on to Wife Swap, it was much more apparent to me because it gave me a reality check. You know, even those people that are supposedly independents in the middle are void of the independent bubble, are void of the Patriot bubble. They do not have the benefit of experiencing and absorbing all of the information that's swirling on inside the bubble. We are all very informed and educated for the most part. Even those of us that are just, you know, nominally keeping one eye on the ball. We know more than your neighbor across the street who has young children and is busy taking them to soccer practice and you know, public school religion classes at night and all of those kinds of things. Those people are the middle ground and they are not involved in what's going on in Washington, D.C., or in your state capital at all. They're totally removed from even the most basic stuff that we look at every single day. They don't have a clue. So when we just had an election yesterday, and even when they go to the polls, they're not informed about who's running for mayor or school board or what the property tax increase is that they're being proposed. They haven't got the slightest clue about any of it. And it's because the media controls. Now, we had, in my particular county, we had a race for fire district board. And as in most counties that I understand it in Missouri, most of the time you see a fire district board person that is supported by the union. And then we have had some people in recent years challenging that person. And it's always very hard to beat the union supported person because they have money, they have control, you know, they can buy advertising, they buy signs, they buy flyers, they pay people to go door to door. You just can't beat that kind of influence. So that's what people get, you know, and they think, oh, you know, this fire district guy is supported by the firemen, he must be good. And they never bother to look into it any deeper. So anyway, back to the Gina Loudon thing. Okay, so Gina Loudon goes on Wife Swap last week, and she is paired with a family that is a polyamorous family. There's a married couple with a girlfriend living in the situation. How far removed, and I know it's an extreme, but how far removed are those folks from our side of the equation? And how many levels of the equation are there in between those folks and us? That you have to look at the culture, folks, and all of those people are being bombarded by left-wing, leftist media tactics every single day. They're not getting the information that's floating around on the inside of the Patriot bubble. So, you know, while, you know, Gina was widely criticized for her family for going on Wife Swap, her excuse and her explanation for doing so, I think, is more valid than ever. Because for generations upon generations, the left has been controlling, you know, they've been chipping away at the environment. They've been worming their way into the schools so that they completely change the school environment one chip at a time. They've done it through the media. And they understand more than anybody, and I've always said this, that politics is not political. It's a basic lesson in human sociology. And the left understands that better than anybody. And if you control the message, you can get people to follow you anywhere. So the left controls the message. The left controls the media. And they have for a long time. And what I think that we need to do, and what I think Gina made the first step in doing, is she stepped outside of the Patriot bubble and she stepped into the cesspool. Okay, it was Wife Swap, and it was nasty and it was disgusting, you know, and it looked degrading, and people criticized her for it. Well, maybe they should have, I don't know. But the reality is that she spent an hour or there was an hour where people got to see the other side of the equation. You know, they saw a family, a very nice-looking family, very well-behaved, well-dressed, no tattoos, no piercings, you know, but they weren't wearing, you know, high neck collars and covering themselves with long denim skirts either. They weren't, you know, what you would call sometimes a stereotypic crazy right-wing religious fanatics either. Very deeply rooted in their Christian religion. It's what guides their family, which is a good thing. But, you know, they looked like very normal mainstream people. They were very polite. They were very courteous. They were very, you know, disagreed with the philosophy of the family that they were paired with. But, you know, how often does the culture get to see that kind of a family? We, you know, in the 50s, that was the norm, you know, the kind of family that we all aspired to be. You know, the mother and the father and the kids, and everybody sat around the dinner table and had dinner together. You know, they attend church. You know, they're cordial and polite and respectful. You know, the kids were all very respectful to the adults. And, you know, there was no disrespect going on. And, you know, we got to start bringing – and so Gina stepped out of the bubble, and she stepped into the cesspool, and she brought some of that back into that culture. For an hour, people across the country got to see that again. And see that there are still people out there living that life. And until we start doing that a little bit more, folks, you got to start chipping away at what has been chipped away at and bring it back. You got to step outside the Patriot bubble, and you got to get back into the other end of the spectrum, and you just have to present the conservative image out there, and you got to keep presenting it. So, and it's something here at Culture Vigilante I've always told you that we need to do is you've got to take control, because no one else is going to do that for you. You've got to take control. You've got to take initiative. You've got to do things a little bit outside the norm, because it's been taken away from you, folks. And if you want it, you got to take it back, and you got to go to the polls. And one thing that you have to do is you have to step outside your comfort zone, and you have to bring one person back into your arena and start introducing them to what you live with every day, information you get every day, knowledge you know about the government every single day. Just pick one person. Go outside of the Patriot bubble and pick one person that you can talk to and start whispering in their ear. You know, start telling them about the Monsanto bill that Roy Blunt sent through, helped send through. Start talking to them about the Department of Revenue here in Missouri that's installing all kinds of equipment that's going to monitor your whereabouts and send data back to Homeland Security against statute. I mean, it's against state law for them to be doing that. You know, people need to start. You got to take control. And as much as you dislike maybe what Gina Loudon did last week, you've got to start looking at the reality of what we are really dealing with here, folks. We are dealing with an entire culture that has been changed by the left-wing media. And if you don't get back into that left-wing media, they're never going to have an opportunity to see your message.
I couldn't agree more, Lisa. And I think that something that I would like to add to that is that I'm really kind of sick of the criticism of Gina Loudon. I don't hear anybody coming up with any alternative way to engage the culture that we're living in and to start to draw the paradigm differences that exist between the two segments of our society. And we truly are a nation that is divided in a way. And the thing about it is that the family that was portrayed, the family that the Loudons were put up against was a lot further away from the norm in the United States than the Loudons are.
Yes.
And nobody's talking about that. And everybody
right.
is so outraged that Gina and John Loudon would put themselves in that position to be ridiculed like they were and so forth. But you know what? They took a chance. They were at least willing to step out of the bubble and do something to try to engage the culture. And I would like to ask someone out there to show me the empirical evidence that they did not make a difference to someone that was sitting out there that watched and said, wow, maybe there is something here and something to this. And so for everybody to say that it was a completely defunct exercise and that they have not accomplished anything, show me the proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
Did the left ridicule and do everything they could to demean them? Of course they did. Mm-hmm. I think the Loudons knew going into it that was going to happen.
Right. They took a huge risk.
And they didn't go in to win over the left. They went over to reach out to middle America, which is a lot more like them than the family that they swapped with.
Yeah, I think conservatism can grow if those people outside the Patriot bubble know they're going to have support.
Right.
You know?
And maybe that's not the best way for us to do it, Lisa. Maybe there's a lesson to be taken away from that effort. Say, okay, let's not quite step off into the shark pool, but we've got to start somewhere, and I applaud the Loudons for at least giving it a try.
Absolutely, and I think your point that when you first started, Cindy, was an excellent point. Okay, so you don't like what they did. What do you suggest? What's your answer? Did you step outside the Patriot bubble? Did you bring somebody in? Have you been helping? You know, what have you done? Because, folks, we've been talking to ourselves for, what, since 2009? You know, and we have a pretty good movement going, and we've done some pretty positive things. But the reality is we have Barack Obama as a second-term president, which should have been a total non-issue, that he should have never been elected as a second-term president. I'm not sure that he actually was, but he should have never been elected as a second-term president. And maybe that's because I know a lot of us worked hard. I'm not trying to diminish the efforts of the Patriot movement out there, because we really did work hard, most of us. But the reality is we didn't work hard enough to go outside our comfort zone. There are still a lot of people out there who don't have a clue about what the Patriot movement is.
Right. And Lisa, at the very base of it, too, is we've got to come to grips with the reality that we're not reaching middle America with our message. Because if we were, Barack Obama would not be a second-term message. I mean, president. He probably would never have been a first-term president. And the problem is that what you said at the beginning of your monologue is exactly right. The left controls the message, and we have got to take the mics back. We've got to find a way to do that, and we have to do it boldly. We have to do it without apology. We have to be in their face.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Loudons made that attempt. More, you know, I applaud that effort. I'm, you know, the outcome wasn't good, but at least they tried, which is
mm-hmm.
more than I can say for a lot of the people that are the naysayers that
mm-hmm.
are so quick to want to form a circular firing squad and take out the patriots that tried.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I think we're good.
That's
so,
my 2 cents worth.
So instead of throwing stones, folks, let's throw a little support. You know, you don't have to like it. I didn't like it when Todd Akin said what he said either, but I supported him, you know. And here we have Claire McCaskill as a consequence of that. You know, there were a lot of people who you know, picked up their ball and went home after Todd Akin made his misstatement, you know, and that was absolutely the wrong thing to do, because now we have, you know, Claire McCaskill. So, you know, you may not have agreed with it in the beginning. You know, people make mistakes. They don't always do the right thing or the best thing that you would have done. But the reality is, you know, John and Jeta Loudon are solid conservatives. Todd Akin is a solid conservative, and they would have been a heck of a lot better than what we've got now. So when you throw your temper tantrums and you get, you know, pick up your toys and you go home, you get a liberal. That's what you get. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, a couple minutes, and we're going to come back with William Estrada. No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve.
Thank you for calling.
This
the
year,
Loudon
we'd like
West
to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal.
Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
This is the Gun Owners Minute. Dan Bongino, a 16-year veteran of the Secret Service protecting presidents and carrying a firearm, speaks out about no such thing as gun control.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's no such thing as gun control. Don't co-opt their language. There's only people control.
Yep, right.
And I can prove it to you. I spent 16 years of my life with a badge on my chest, which served as a target for some, unfortunately. I don't remember ever having the conversation during my years in the Secret Service. I mean, listen, we're taking the president to Baltimore, to Chicago, so let's just disarm because they have really strict gun control laws. Now, why is that funny? The reason is it's funny because it's funny. I never, in 15-plus years of doing this, have ever arrested or investigated someone on a gun crime who had that gun legally. So you have to ask yourself, why? It's not about gun control. Do not co-opt the language. When they own the language, they own the argument.
Yes.
There is a reason they are doing this.
Help get his message out and make this go viral. For the full text, go to, why is this month-old clip of an ex-Secret Service agent suddenly going viral on YouTube? This has been The Old Patriot.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for GrassFire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
This is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we are back, and thanks to Cindy for that fancy footwork on the board while I was trying to get the call set up. We were kind of having a little technical difficulty, but we are back with William Estrada from ParentalRights.org, and we talked a little bit earlier about, and we have talked in the past, about this family, the Romicke family from Germany, and the issues involved in their struggle to maintain their religious freedom and their parental rights, and their freedom to choose their education for their kids. You know, I've written a piece up at politichicks.tv about this issue. You've probably seen other pieces all across. It's a nationwide effort now to get the word out about why it is so important for people to get behind this issue to not only save the Romicke family's right to do what they feel is right for their kids, but how this stretches out to affect your rights as a Missourian, as American citizens all across the country. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Estrada.
Great to be on. Thank you for having me tonight.
So this is blowing up. I mean, we've kind of talked about this a little bit before, but this is a huge, huge deal. Why don't you just kind of give us some basic background on how this all came about?
You know, this story actually starts in 1620. We all know the story of the Pilgrims. On 1620, they came across the ocean. They landed on Plymouth Rock. But it starts a little bit before that. They fled England a decade before. They went to Holland, but Holland didn't turn out how they thought it would be. They fled there so they could practice their religion as they saw fit. But in Holland, their children were being drafted into the military. They were really concerned about the culture. And then they turned their sights to the New World. We all know how history ended, how our country was started with people who fled their homeland for to find a new place where they could follow the dictates of their conscience, what God had laid on their hearts. And when we look at the German Romicke family, it's the same type of story. They're modern-day pilgrims. They started homeschooling their children in 2006. Unfortunately, Germany bans homeschooling. They had their children removed by armed police officers. They were facing fines over $9,000. Mr. Romicke, his name is Uwe Romicke, he's a piano teacher. I mean, he doesn't make a ton of money. So in 2008, they left everything behind. They boarded a plane, they fled to the United States, and they claimed political asylum. In 2010, there's this immigration judge, his name is Lawrence Berman. He heard their case, and he said, you know what, this family qualifies for asylum in our country. It's actually fascinating. He went into the history of the law banning homeschooling. It actually dates to 1938 when the Nazi Party said, children belong to the state, we are going to control the education. The law never got repealed. And that's the law that the Romicke family and other homeschoolers in Germany are being persecuted under. So the family got religious asylum. It was a great decision in 2010. But unfortunately, and incredibly sadly, our government appealed. And the brief is pretty chilling, actually. Our government, the United States government, says the right of parents to educate their children is not a fundamental right. It would be fine for them to put their kids in public school. They should not receive asylum. Let's deport this family back to Germany. And unfortunately, last year, the Board of Immigration Appeals overturned the Romicke family's asylum and ordered them to be deported. So we filed an immediate appeal in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. And on April 23rd, just a few days from now, Mike Farris, our founder, is going to be arguing before a three-judge panel in Cincinnati, Ohio, saying let the Romaike family stay here where they can homeschool their children according to the dictates of their conscience.
Don't even know where to begin with this. This is just outrageous. So I'm seeing a lot. I mean, you know, something I kind of did want to address with parentalrights.org is, and I haven't heard, seen, maybe I've just missed it, but I haven't seen a lot coming from you guys about the Common Core curriculum issues. And I see a lot of parallels here. You know, we're kind of, I'm kind of immersed in the Common Core issues here in Missouri. And basically, I mean, what that kind of does is it's the same thing. I mean, I can understand why Eric Holder and the Department of Homeland Security would be fighting this, because it lines up with the agenda of making nationalized education under the, you know, under the government, under the federal government. This would kind of support that. You know, they're trying
to. You're absolutely right. And when you think of the Common Core and when you think of the Romaike family, it all boils down to one central premise. Who do the children belong to, and who should be in charge of their education and upbringing? Is it government bureaucrats, whether in Germany, saying, no, all kids go to public school, or government bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., saying all kids will learn a centralized curriculum, or is it parents and the local school board, which is accountable to parents? And that's why, you know, as you know, I'm also one of the attorneys at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and I do the lobbying work for parentalrights.org. So these two situations just are so close together, as you correctly said.
Yeah, and I think as we've seen, we've watched a lot of issues here in Missouri. We have a parental rights bill that we talked to you about a few weeks ago, going through the House, and we have a lot of Common Core issues, and we have a bill attached to that going through the House. We have Agenda 21 bills going through, and I got an update on that. We'll talk about that later. Going through the House and the Senate here in Missouri, and all of these things do seem to find common threads that reach over into each other's boundaries. So, you know, if the federal government gets a victory here in deporting the Romaike family, then, you know, it's just going to strengthen possibly some of these other agendas that are all kind of tied to it. So let's talk a little bit about. Let's go into a little bit more detail, I guess, about how this really affects parental rights for Americans. I mean, if you know, obviously we're going to be deporting foreigners who come to this country for political asylum and religious asylum based on what could happen to this family, but it's really going to have a huge effect on the rest of us.
Oh, absolutely. And let me first say, it's interesting that this is happening in the backdrop of, you know, the whole discussion about immigration reform. And regardless of what you think about immigration and the bills being discussed in Washington, D.C., this family did everything right. They fled here that, you know, I always think of the Emma Lazarus poem, "Send me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." That's what this family is, the Romaike family. They fled here so they could be free. They're not on any government assistance. They want to become citizens. They speak English. And we're about to deport this family back to where they'll face persecution. The governments, our United States government, the position that it's arguing is that the right of parents to direct the education of their children is not a fundamental right. They're saying the government can take that away, and that's no problem on your individual liberties. It actually goes against what the Supreme Court has said in cases dating back to 1925, Pierce versus Society of Sisters, where the Supreme Court ruled the right of parents to direct the education and upbringing of their children is a fundamental right. So this is not just a homeschool issue. This strikes to the heart of, again, you know, as you said before, who do the kids belong to?
So, and where is he going to be arguing? Where is Michael Ferris going to be arguing this case on
It'll
the 23rd?
April 23rd, Cincinnati, Ohio, at the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal courthouse there. And you know what? Actually, our listeners, even in Missouri, there's something that you can do to help. We are, of course, litigating this case. Our whole litigation team is doing nothing but preparing for these oral arguments. But we are also litigating this in the court of public opinion. We have a petition at whitehouse.gov, at the White House page, and we're trying to get 100,000 signatures of Americans saying, President Obama, why are you seeking to deport this freedom-loving family? You can, with the stroke of a pen, you have the legal authority to let people who claim asylum to stay here. We have almost 35,000 people who have signed, but time is running out. So, you know, if any of our listeners want to sign that petition to stand up for this family, to drive the media story by forcing the president to respond, you can visit our webpage, hslva.org.
Okay, very good. Oh, does it ever end? So, since there is precedent, I mean, to support this family and their decision, obviously it's going to be a dogfight, but what do you think the chances are of us being able to help this family stay here?
You know, I'll be honest, it's an uphill battle. It's very helpful that the immigration judge ruled in the favor of the family. So that's a strong position in our favor. But the government is making a strong case that the family should be deported. And generally, the courts are pretty open to what the government is saying, particularly when it comes to asylum and immigration. One of the other issues is, I think some of our politicians are saying, well, you know, Germany is an ally of ours. We don't want to raise any feathers. But really, it comes down to, as we've all talked about, that there are fundamental human rights. Our country, despite all of our problems, it's still a shining city on a hill where people are trying to flee here for freedom. And you know, I hope the judges make the right decision. And I hope also that the president and the media picks up this story and that people start putting the pressure on the administration to do the right thing and let the Romaike family stay here.
Absolutely. And as we talked about earlier in the show, I mean, people, you know, the thing that makes the difference in stopping the pushback from the federal government and stopping the pushback from the left is for you to step outside the Patriot bubble and get involved and engaged and bring a person along with you to do that that's not in the Patriot bubble. And it's very important to sign this petition, and it's very important to get that information from hslda.org. Is there anything else that the folks can do to help this initiative along, Mr. Estrada?
Well, all the information is at hslda.org to sign the petition and also to share this and to get the word out. You know, and looking at another issue, you mentioned the Common Core. This is another issue that HSLDA and parentalrights.org have researched and put out information. We encourage you find out about the Common Core and the concerns about this national curriculum and the databases that are coming along, and then contact your state legislators. So if anyone's home and wanting homework to do, first thing is hit the president on the federal side and get this issue before his attention, sign the petition, and then contact your state legislators and your state governor about the Common Core state standards and say, this was a rush to adopt. Let's take a pause here and leave educational decisions in the hands of parents and local school boards.
Now, I don't want to blindside you because we haven't discussed this, but can you comment about the Common Core and how it's going to affect homeschoolers?
Absolutely, I can. The Common Core, I think you've probably given a good history of it, but in 2009, in the federal stimulus bill, the federal government created what was called Race to the Top, and these were grants that the federal government would give to states that supposedly met certain criteria. One of the criteria was that they adopt this Common Core state standards, which is basically a national set of standards and curriculum that all students in public schools would learn. So the state started adopting this so they could receive these Race to the Top grants. And at all the time, you know, the federal government was saying, oh, this is state-driven, we're not doing anything, but they were using federal dollars as a carrot to lure the states into adopting the Common Core. Fast forward to today, 45 states have adopted the Common Core. Only Texas, Virginia, Alaska, Minnesota, and there's always one other state that I can never remember, have not adopted the Common Core. You can, again, visit our webpage, hslda.org, and just search for Common Core, and you'll see the states that have adopted it. But these states have adopted the Common Core, and the more that people dig into it, students are no longer being taught the classics. They're being asked to read Obama executive orders as part of their language arts. So it's bad educationally. It's just poor education that students in public school are receiving. But it's also, again, creating this national one-size-fits-all approach to education. I do need to say, you know, it doesn't currently include homeschoolers. But our concern is that if this becomes a complete national curriculum and all the states adopt it and national standards, there's going to be intense pressure for homeschool students to be taught according to the Common Core and to be tested along with the Common Core. And then the other concern is employers and colleges and maybe federal jobs will be closed to students who have not been taught according to the Common Core. So it's definitely something that all parents should be concerned about. If your kids are in public school, I feel, you know, I've researched this pretty extensively, and many educators are saying, what are we teaching our kids with the Common Core? And if you're a homeschooler or in a private school, it may come back to bite you down the road.
Absolutely, because the architect of the Common Core is now the president of the College Board Association. So it follows very closely that all of the standardized testing for a college entrance will follow the Common Core, and if your child is a homeschooled child or a privately schooled child, you're going to have a hard time getting into college if you haven't had that curriculum.
And the College Board also creates the SAT, the ACT, and many of the tests, which pretty much any student who's college-bound is going to have to take.
Absolutely. So there you go, folks. They may not, you know, lead you in willingly, but they're gonna rope you in one way or another, and you're not even going to know it. Okay.
If I can just plug in one more thing, you know, we've talked before about the rise of these national databases where student data is going into it. I don't feel comfortable yet to talk too much about it because I've just started researching it. We're writing up a research paper about it. But that's another thing that I encourage parents to look at, especially kids in public school. There are these databases being created that are aligned between the states where your students' information, a lot of personal information, is being stored. And again, you can go, you can research it, and we'll be having an issue paper coming out in the next couple of weeks about this.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, because that is the basis of the Common Core. It's all about data collection, and a great resource for that is Missouri Education Watchdog, folks. They have done excellent research over the past 3 or 4 years on all of the Common Core and the Race to the Top and how it's all gelled together, and they've done fabulous, fabulous work there. So the best thing for folks to do to help the Romike family?
Yep, Romike family. It's a hard German word to pronounce.
Yeah. Something that I kind of wanted to mention that when you were speaking, it kind of triggered my head. Those folks came here legally. They went through all the proper procedures. They filled out all the paperwork. They did everything absolutely legally, and they were granted asylum here legally because they went through the court the right way, everything. They've done everything right, and they've had nothing but persecution since they've gotten here.
It's a shame, actually. It's a national shame. They did everything right. The judge granted them religious asylum, and then our government appealed to overturn it and to try and deport them back to Germany.
I just think that's an interesting fact there that needs to be punctuated. Folks, go to the petition, White House. Sign that petition, whitehouse.gov. Ask your neighbor to sign the petition, whitehouse.gov, because even though you don't think that this German family affects you personally, what happens to them will affect you personally. It's another chip away at your freedoms and your liberties. Go to hslda.org. Learn about the Common Core. Learn about homeschooling. Look for that paper that's coming out on Common Core very soon. Your teeth are going to fall out of your head when you read about the data collection because it's just unbelievable. It's 1984 all over again. Mr. William Estrada, thank you so very much for your time and your efforts in this with the Remicki family. And we hope that you'll come back when you get your Common Core paper published and give us some details on that as well.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
We're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who will have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible, because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
Hi, we're back. And we are waiting for a call from Alan Levy from citizenlegislator.org. But before that, we talked a little bit earlier about a bill from our illustrious Senator Roy Blunt. You know, we so need to replace that guy. We really need to start vetting some candidates to get him out of there. Anyway, Obama signs Monsanto Protection Act, written by Monsanto-sponsored senator. This was in RT Question More this week. Anyway, I'll just kind of read this through and we'll kind of just discuss this little issue. United States President Barack Obama has signed a bill into law that was written in part by the very billion-dollar corporation that will benefit directly from the legislation. It's called H.R. 933, and it's a continuing resolution spending bill approved in Congress days earlier. Buried in the 78 pages of the bill exists a provision that grossly protects biotech corporations such as, wait for it, Missouri-based Monsanto Company from litigation. Now, folks, why is it necessary? And I know a lot of people have had questions about Monsanto in the past. Is it good? Is it bad? The kinds of things that they do with genetically modified foods. But if it's not a problem, why do you need a bill to protect them from litigation? I read on. With the president's signature, agriculture giants that deal with genetically modified organisms and genetically engineered seeds are given the go-ahead to continue to plant and sell man-made crops, even as questions remain largely unanswered about health risks these types of products pose to consumers. In light of approval from the House and Senate, more than 250,000 people signed a petition asking the president to veto the spending bill. Okay, and I'm just going to skim through this a little bit more quickly. Obama ignored the petition, according to the IB Times. Instead of choosing to sign a bill that effectively bars federal courts from being able to halt the sale or planting of genetically modified organisms or genetically engineered crops and seeds, no matter what the health consequences from the consumption of these products may come to light in the future. Let me just skip to the really good stuff. Let's see here. Senator Blunt defended the bill. Maybe I should back up. If the president's signature isn't all that surprising, though, consider the genesis of the bill itself. According to an article published Monday in the New York Daily News, Senator Blunt worked with Monsanto to craft the language of the bill. Senator Blunt defended his bill to the news, shrugging off his suggestions that it set a startling precedent that will affect all U.S. agriculture by firing back. What it says, according to the senator, it says, if you plant a crop that is legal to plant, when you plant it, you get to harvest it, but it is only a one-year protection in that bill. Okay, so 1 year could be all that it takes to cause catastrophic damage to the environment by allowing laboratory-produced organisms to be planted into the earth without oversight under Monsanto Protection Act. Health concerns that arise in the immediate future involving the planting of GMO crops won't be able to be heard by a judge. Blunt, a junior senator that's held office since the 90s, has good reason to whitewash the bill. The Center for Responsive Politics notes that Senator Blunt received $64,250 from Monsanto to go towards his campaign committee between 2008 and 2012. The money monocle, website adds that Blunt has been the largest Republican Party recipient of Monsanto funding of late. Okay, I'm just tongue-tied by this. On the lawmaker's official website, a statement explains a little more as to why he favored the bill and the writer within it. And this is what Blunt has to say on his website. As the ranking member of the Appropriations Subcommittee on Agriculture, Rural Development, Food and Drug Administration, and related agencies, Senator Blunt played a vital role in writing the fiscal year 2013 Agriculture Appropriations Bill. This legislation maintained a vital support for research and extension of land-grant universities, capacity-building grants for non-land-grant colleges of agriculture, and competitive funding under the U.S. Department of Agriculture's USDA Agriculture and Food Research Initiative. The bill also included funding for conservative activities, housing and business loan programs for rural communities, domestic and international nutrition programs. Nowhere does the senator cite mention the Monsanto Protection Act by name, yada, yada. Okay, I don't know, folks. What do you think? I'm just not seeing it, Cindy. This to me is just one more example of why we need term limits. It's going to be so hard to get him out of office. He is such a part of the Republican establishment, and he is so entrenched. You know, we have a Blunt dynasty here in Missouri. It's going to be murder to get him out. And I believe that we have Alan Levy on the line with us now to talk to us a little bit about what citizens can do in Missouri and across the country to stop this just intense entrenchment of these establishment politicians, Republicans and Democrats. Welcome, Mr. Levy. How are you?
Hello, Lisa. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, I don't know how much of that you heard, but we have certainly got our share of establishment conservative or establishment Republicans and establishment Democrats. And you know, you and I spoke briefly last week a little bit about this entire situation of imposing term limits. There are other things that I'd love to see done too, like, you know, repealing the 17th Amendment so that we could bring senators like Roy Blunt home. But why don't you tell me a little bit about this organization that you started, Citizen Legislator. You are interested in creating or putting through an amendment to the Constitution that would initiate term limits for federal politicians. And you don't want to do this by way of a con. You want to put this through the legislature.
Well, yes. The appropriate way would be through the Congress.
Okay. So how did you come up? We spoke a little bit about the history, but what motivated you to get this rolling?
Lisa, I come from an old family, and we have been involved in politics for several generations. And I did my duty and got involved when I was a younger person. I left the country and for a couple of decades lived in Mexico, in fact. And when I returned, I got back involved in politics. I saw the state of the nation, and it worried me. I took my concerns to this generation, and we talked and discussed the issues, and we explored the problem and tried to dissect it and find where we might contribute. It was our turn. We ended up with congressional term limits, and we did that for several reasons. To begin with, I think we'd all need to recognize that the polling for term limits ranges anywhere from 70% to 95%. Now, I'm
in favor.
It's around 80% in favor. Yes.
Wonderful.
And that's more than both parties combined. And I think if you explore the issue, you'll come to the same conclusion that we did. When you have a problem, go straight to the problem. Don't beat around the bush. I meant that figuratively.
Right.
You have to look at the power of the two parties. It's derived in Congress. If you want to change the system or change the way people are performing, the politics within the system. Change the rules. And the rules are in Congress, and they're not the same as the state legislature, where they're openly debated and voted on. They're made behind closed doors between the leaders of the two parties. And if you want to participate in legislation, you have to belong to the two parties, and you have to pay attention to the leadership. And the two rules say so. So the real key is changing the rules. If you're working on other initiatives that you think need an urgent attention, I congratulate you, and I would always encourage it. However, it's almost as if you're moving the furniture in a burning house and just barely escaping the flames from room to room, when instead maybe you should be putting out the flames. And that's the way I look at this. And that's the way we decided we had to look at this. I have many, many, many close, dear friends who have been working on issues for years now. But I think the best way to go about it is the very first step would be term limits. And so we decided to start an initiative, and we are getting ready to begin, and we are in the process of setting up a national network of volunteers to help. This is all volunteer-driven. And you had last week on your show Molly Neesham, who is one of our, who is a state director for us in Missouri.
Right.
And I want to thank you for that. I enjoyed listening.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the details of the amendment. You're asking that three terms for representative and two terms for senator be the way of the world there, and no term beginning before the date of the ratification of this article shall be taken into account if determining the eligibility for the election or appointment under this article. So let's talk a little bit about the terms which you're proposing.
Yes. We have watched the term limits movement over the, since the early 90s. And it failed for several reasons. And we note those reasons on the website. And I would invite everyone to go take a look at the website. It's at www.citleg.org. If you explore the history of the movement, you'll see that the very last time, the time that we came closest was during the period where the Gingrichs really and the Republicans took over the party, and they had their contract with America, and term limits was one of the issues in the contract. The Republicans pushed it, and they pushed it, I think, successfully up until the point of agreement on the number of terms that those in Congress should be limited to.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to ask me personally, Lisa, I would suggest to you that was more of a cover for not supporting the bills. They didn't want to come up with a bill. They decided against term limiting themselves.
Right.
And I think that's going to be another problem. And I what we're trying to do is not rely on the two parties, not rely on the top, and do it from the bottom up. If we can get the volunteers to stand forward and do and work with us and join with us and do the work that's necessary, if we do it from the bottom up, we believe that with the tools that are available today, unlike in times previous, we think we can accomplish a lot more, reach a lot more people, and get a lot more support. But we have to have people who will stand up and help, like the volunteers are.
Okay, and so what's the plan then? Because of course, I mean, politics is all about numbers. You either have people and votes, or you have money. You know, obviously, an organization like this needs both. So, what are you looking for from your volunteers?
Well, the campaign. What we try to do is design this in a campaign. We're asking so many people to help that we're trying to make it as easy as we can get it. We know that. A lot of people want to support the effort, and they can't always spend the time or volunteer. So what we're doing is making it simple for them. we're asking everyone to take three steps, and that's really it. Take three steps, and if they will just take the three steps, then I think that we can reach enough people to where we can make a difference. The first step is sign the petition. The second step is to donate some money. And the third step is to share the campaign with your friends. You know, over the last few years, we saw repeatedly from time to time chain mail emails that went out calling for term limits. But they never gave you some way to take an action. It was really one of just frustration and tell as many people and get as many people to agree as possible. But no action is taken. It's time to actually take that action. We have to take that action. I don't think we can afford to continue careerism in Congress. The people who are governing have no idea what it's like to be governed. And that really has to change. And the sooner that we do that, the sooner that we change those rules in Congress, the sooner we'll have a more transparent, more open, and I would suggest more forthright political environment.
Absolutely. And yeah, again, it's numbers. So the education is the big thing. And we've already been on our soapbox about bringing one more person into the Patriot bubble that isn't already there. So this is a great way to do that. Get on this website, citleg.org, and get and educate yourself, and then send a link to some people on your email list so that they can kind of get a clue about what's going on. And you might want to send the link to that.
Step three actually does it. If they'll go and take the three steps, it's at the very on the very home page. If they'll go take the three steps that lead to from first to second to third, take the three steps and do what you can do, but for gosh sakes, be sure that you share with as many friends as you can. I would strongly urge that you take all three steps. We couldn't have made it any shorter than we did. I think we timed it. I think the fastest time was down to 2 minutes. If you'll give us the 2 minutes, legitimately. And then I'll suggest one other thing. You should consider volunteering. We are setting up a national network, which means that we're starting to roll out states this week and next week. The first few states, a little less than a dozen. So I suggest what you do is, in Missouri as an example, get hold of Molly Neeson. I think you, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you have her.
I do have that information, and I will put that up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org.
Yeah, and I was going to suggest, call Molly and volunteer. We need people to volunteer. It's not hard and difficult to convince people to take three steps when it concerns congressional term limits. And it really goes fast. I was making a comment. I'm not sure if it was Molly or one of the other state directors, but I noted that I also am getting people to take the three steps. And one of the things I did, I went to the dentist the other day, and when I was paying the bill, it's an annual checkup, I stopped and they're friends, and I started to tell them what was going on and where we were, and I said, I'm going to come back. Y'all need to take the three steps to make a commitment. And so they actually arranged for another day where I could go in, and on their computer, five of their employees would take the three steps.
Excellent.
Exactly. So these are the ways that things can work. Now, those five people probably will share it each with another at least 30 people on their email list, because in step three, we give you a way to do that from the website. If everyone will participate and just contribute those 2 minutes, take the three steps, and we have a real chance to hit the types of numbers that we need to actually cause Congress to want to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we don't want to open this up for a con. We absolutely want to do this.
We want to give the two parties that are at the heart of our problem control over our constitutional convention. That's sort of a that'd be bizarre.
Absolutely.
Jumping out of the pan into the fire. I don't think anyone has any desire for that. But I think coming down the road, there may be some changes that we do need to do. Back with President Teddy Roosevelt, from that time forward, we see a lot of changes, and a lot of changes in the Constitution. Maybe some of those changes weren't for the best.
Mm-hmm.
And in modern era that we're in, maybe it's better that we pay attention a little closer to the admonitions of our founding fathers, which were clear in the necessity to rotate constantly your elected representatives. We do in presidential power because we realize we came so close, it was so dangerous, they immediately moved after FDR. Okay, wham. We need to consider that if we're changing the executive branch, we really do need to change the lawmakers themselves. And, you know, we would have hoped that it could have been by a simple election, but with the way politics have operated today under a increasingly closed two-party system, and a media that is, I think, a bit too complicit.
Yeah, very strongly left-wing.
I think the only chance is that we actually impose, as we originally had in our Articles of Confederation, as too wordy as this may have made the Constitution, I think that was our founders' main concern. I think we need to go ahead and put it in because of the way that modern politics have gone. We need to rotate these representatives, and they need to know what it's like to be governed.
Right. They're there too long, and a dynasty evolves, and, you know, we don't do that here in America. We're not supposed to do that in America.
There are a lot of problems that I think that people identify elsewhere that have, they're in a sense, their roots in rotating your representatives. Campaign finance is constantly being reformed. It's sort of like one of the pork pies for the political parties, education. It's under constant reform.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever anything's under constant reform, it should throw up a red flag. And in the case of term limits, I believe that it would cause so much change that it would dramatically affect the power of special interests to affect
mm-hmm.
our political process. And I think that's one of the more important aspects that we should all pay attention to. In the past, our failures, I believe, have been centered on the fact that too many who were involved in the movement was almost from top down, which is to say they owed favors to very highly placed people in the Republican Party or maybe the Democratic Party, but in the parties, and I'd say more likely the GOP. And so they didn't want to change their power structure. They owed favors. They were concerned about their positions, maybe even after leaving the position of running the initiative. I don't know exactly what. I wasn't there. So I can't tell you, but I know that there were a lot of connections involved between the GOP and the movement itself, and which makes sense. But in the same sense, when it came time to do the types of things you have to do to really get attention from politicians, they wouldn't take those steps. I would suggest to you the best way to get the attention of a politician is through his pocketbook.
Yep.
He respects that far more than anything else.
Absolutely. It's a numbers game.
I don't believe that the prior efforts would go to that extent to fight for the people. I mean, very frankly, having come from an old family deep inside the party, I don't think that they would have dared to do that. We don't hold any similar notions. And I think that in time that the people, if they will just spend their 2 minutes, they'll be the wherewithal to go after the politicians in a way that it would just be easier to agree. And this time, actually succeed. That's
mm-hmm.
our belief. And we, because we don't owe any favors to any political party, and we are nonpartisan, and we look at this strictly as a structural defect compared to a partisan issue of politics between two parties. We just want to see this defect corrected, and then they can go ahead and play their politics within
Correct.
The appropriate rules.
And give the people a little bit more voice, you know, a little less voice coming from D.C. and a little bit more voice coming from the states. That's really what we want.
And in the same sense, if the people had that opportunity, could see that happening, I think there are other measures that they're concerned with that are very reasonable. I think they have reason to be concerned about the different actions taken between the federal government and state governments. And there's other areas that I think they would like to see change. And I think correctly, but you have to start somewhere, and we believe term limits is definitely the first place to begin. And I think the public would, once they see this, I think they will be, they gain some momentum toward some of the other issues that I think are pretty, I think most everybody would agree with. You know, everyone's complaining about how districting is working. There are other issues. You mentioned the 17th Amendment. There are other issues. The state laws that are restricted and help to prevent third parties or independents or citizen legislators. There
right. What we saw last year at the National Convention, how the Republicans worked to put in place rules that silenced the voices of the independent and third parties.
If you're doing that, how can you consider it an open? If you just stripped away, and both parties did this, if you stripped away the power for the rank and file to actually participate, unless they're actually running for office, that's not an open political process. That's more like a gang.
Yeah.
That
it's
sounds
thuggery.
Terrible, but it really is.
Yeah, it's thuggery. Absolutely.
And
okay.
So I think we're going to have problems, but term limits is the best way of going about it. So
it's the greatest first step.
I hope we can get as many people as possible to volunteer, and especially in Missouri with Molly Neesham.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you for having given us the time to chat. And also thank you for last week. I found that a great interview, and I very much appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate the effort that you're putting forth here to bring forth and bring some light to this subject. I agree with you. I think there is a lot of support for term limits on a national level, and you can go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org probably tomorrow, and I will have all of the information for Missourians to become involved and engaged. We'll put Molly Neesham's information up there, along with the CIT.LEG.org link to their website there for the national effort there. So if you're not in Missouri and you want to get involved in this great national effort, we'll put that up there. Thank you, Alan Levy. We really appreciate you being here. Everybody go take the three steps. Go to CITLEG.org and take the three steps. Donate a little money, take the other steps, and become involved and engaged. We would love to have you come back and let us know how this initiative is going.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I appreciate that very much.
All right, very good. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
Okay, bye now.
Okay, we don't have any more commercial breaks, so I think we're going to just kind of wrap things up tonight. But there are a couple of little things I want to talk about before we wrap up for the evening. We've kind of had a wild week, so we're kind of having a shortened version of Culture Vigilante tonight. But let's see here. Free Market Warrior coming to St. Charles County the 29th and 30th to give a two-night seminar, and I've already started putting this information out, and I'll have that information up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Lauren Spivak tours the country talking to Tea Party groups, conservative organizations, giving just great information on the free market capitalist system that you might not be getting from your regular sources. A great perspective on the free market. He will be giving a free seminar at the Family Vision Library on April 29th and April 30th from 6:30 to 10. I'll have all the information there at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, or you could go to the Family Vision Library and get that information as well. I also urge you, bring your teenagers to this seminar. Because if they're probably, if they're in a public or a private school, they're probably not getting this perspective on the free market capitalist system. And there's a YouTube video floating around, and I'll put that up at Missouri Grassroots also, of Lauren Spivak, and you can kind of get a taste about what he's going to talk about in his seminars. Very interesting and enlightening, and it's something that we're going to need to start training our youth. Those kinds of ideas, our youth are going to need to start hearing that, because they're not going to get it for sure in the public schools. They may not be getting it in the private schools. If you're a homeschooler, this is a great opportunity to supplement their education. April 29th, 30th. A couple other things. We talked a little bit about Common Core this week or this evening. I'm going to be speaking at the Pillar Foundation on the 22nd of April. About the Common Core standards here in Missouri and what homeschoolers and everyone can do to get informed about this issue. Homeschoolers, amazingly enough, and sadly enough, are very misinformed or very much not enlightened about what this whole issue is. You know, they've heard of it. They've, you know, some of them have heard of it, you know, but they don't really know what it is, and they certainly don't know how it can affect them as homeschooling people, parents, how it can affect your parental rights. And on the 23rd, I'm going to be speaking to the St. Louis County Republican Women on Common Core and various other issues. So I'll have all that information up on my Facebook pages, and I'll put that up also at MGC. Cindy, have you got anything to close with? Have we got anything else that we need to cover this evening?
I don't know. I think we've covered quite a bit tonight, and I think that term limits is an excellent idea, and people should get on board to try to support that effort, to try and get that on the radar on a national level to see if we can get that done. I think that spreading the word on Common Core is critical. If you know homeschoolers, I really urge you to talk to them and tell them that they need to be concerned about this, and they do need to be concerned about it. They are Race to the Top was designed by Arne Duncan, and it was designed to take over, to gain complete control over our education system, and that included private and homeschooling entities. And if you go back and you look at some of the things that Arne Duncan has done in the past, implementing Race to the Top on a smaller scale, what he was able to do in those states, it's pretty mind-boggling. And people need to be aware that this is about really fundamentally changing education as we have known it in the United States. It is about absolute and complete control of your children. And
it's about creating a managed workforce.
Correct. It is absolutely about creating a managed workforce. And when you were talking about that with William Estrada about the Common Core and the longitudinal data system, homeschoolers are not going to be immune from that either, because the whole idea is that the corporations are in bed with these people to make sure that this longitudinal data system is put in place, and that these children are tracked right now from kindergarten through their early years in the workforce. But ultimately, the goal, when you look at all of the papers that have been written, that all of the papers on this longitudinal data system, they are planning and eventually to track from the womb to the tomb every single person in this country. And the data sets, once these children are being tracked, they'll never escape the information that is gathered on them, and it will follow them the rest of their lives. It will govern the decisions of the teachers and the people in their lives, not the parents, but the others involved in their education. They will be the ones who will be deciding what these kids are going to do, what career field they're going to go into. And it will pretty much be kind of like
it's going to mirror Soviet Russia when we were growing up.
Thank you. Think Soviet Russia. Think the just off the top of my head. Think about the
communist China.
The the Olympic Games and how these countries chose their athletes. And these athletes weren't allowed to take a different track. This is what they were trained for. This is what the state drove them to do. And your children will be used in just such a way. And there are big corporations that are putting a lot of money into making sure that this data system and these common core standards are initiated because it is to their benefit to do so. You know, those of us who have homeschooled Lisa, like yourself, you know, we have a son who aspired to be a pilot, and because he was being homeschooled, he was able to fulfill that dream. He was able to go into the Navy. He was able to get into their flight program. He is a pilot now. He is, he flies acrobatic planes now that he's out, and he loves flying. But I don't think that if he'd gone to public school that he would have been able to find and realize that dream. And he certainly might not, even with that bent, even with his capabilities. I suspect, knowing our son's educational background and so forth and what he is really good in, the state would have never seen that as beneficial for him to pursue his love of flying. They would have seen him needing to pursue his math expertise and going into engineering, and that's what they would have driven him towards at best. And maybe they would have looked at our family's socioeconomic status, which is tracked through the longitudinal data system, and decided that our child needed to serve the state in a different way and shouldn't even be able to pursue his expertise in math and so he may have never realized any of his dreams, but then simply realizing the dreams of the state. And if that sounds bizarre and outdated, I really urge you, before you criticize what I've said, go do your own research.
Yeah, and stop and think, folks. You know, this is 2013. Who would have thought in 2003 that we would be dealing with nationalized health care? We would be dealing with the near collapse of our economy. We would be dealing with all of the things that we're dealing with today. You know, if we would have said these kinds of things would be going on in the very near future in 2003, you know, people would have looked at you like you had two heads. It's happening, folks. It is absolutely happening. So, you know, this data system tracking and all of this 1984-esque behavior that's coming out of your government, I mean, they're doing it through the Department of Revenue here. My God. So, and it's a fact, and they know it. You know, they're not even denying it. So, folks, it's a reality. You just have to take it seriously. Another thing I want to touch upon, I got a news flash from the Missouri Precinct Project. They kind of wanted to let us know later this evening that SB 265 was perfected in the Senate this afternoon. The SB 265 is a companion bill to HB 42, I believe, the Agenda 21 bill. So it is moving along. It's been perfected in the Senate, and I guess it's going to the House now. Is that how that works, right, Cindy? Once the Senate does its thing, yep, it takes its way through the House, and hopefully they will move that along as well. So, everything's connected.
That's a big step. Yeah. It's a good thing. We need to push to see that gets passed.
Yeah, and everything's connected, folks. There are aspects of Agenda 21 and the Common Core. This issue with the homeschooling situation with the Romaki family, you know, there are aspects of all of that in Agenda 21, and I mean, it's all connected to each other. You have to pay attention to all of it. And
it really is connected, Lisa. And you know, when you look at Common Core and Agenda 21, just throwing this out there for people to chew on for a little bit, you know, ultimately what they're really working towards, and this president has talked about it. The first Bush talked about it and supported it, this whole idea of a one-world government and an international workforce.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to get that? You're going to create a common core system to make that happen.
Yep, you've got to line the soldiers up in the right way, and they've all got to be doing the same thing at the same time.
Exactly.
For it to work. You know, and just to wind it up, folks, you know, there's so many other topics, and we'll be covering those in the future, we hope. We'll hit you with some more legislation updates next week, too. But the reality is, folks, you know, we're going to end where we started. You have to go outside the Patriot bubble. You have to start casting a wider net. and bringing people into the sphere of information that you already have. And, you know, you can't bombard them with it, but you got to start, going outside your bubble. You got to start giving them little bits and pieces. Expand your email list with information and articles. You just, maybe just pick one person. You know, you don't have to hit 20 people. You don't have to hit 50 people. Just find one person. If everybody just found one person and started giving them a little bit of information, you know, information is power. Knowledge is power. So, folks, if you start spreading that information out outside of the Patriot bubble, you will strengthen the Patriot movement, and that is how we will bring our government back to the people. That is how we'll bring our culture back to the people. So that's your homework for this week. We will be back again next week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time right here on Missouri Grassroots Radio with Culture Vigilante. Thank you so much for being here.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.